Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Spin the Rally Pod post Portugal, we are, and the whole gang is here. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, the rally fan, and as ever, I'm joined by the technical guru, former motorsport team boss George Donaldson, the man they call the voice of rally, Colin Clark, and Dirtfish senior staff writer, David Evans. Well, Portugal done and dusted. I've got to hold my hand up and say I didn't get a chance to watch any of it over the weekend. I know, you know how life gets in the way? It was one of those weekends, but I have been gradually going back, checking all the excellent work you've been doing on dirtfish.com. But, wow, Portugal, eh?
Yeah. No, it was really, really... Do you know what, Lisa? It was really good to get some degree of normality back into rallying. You know, we had for the first time since 2019, you know, we had a very long rally indeed, nearly 340 kilometres.
Gorgeous,
We had fans out on the stages, still not allowed into the service park, sadly, as media people, but that'll come shortly. But David, it did again just feel like a really, really almost proper rally.
I did. I can't remember where we were, Cole, but I remember saying to you at some point that, you know, finally we were adding times up, and it was coming to over 3.5 hours of competition, which it's been a while since we've had that, and we've missed it. You know, every day felt like a good chunky day. You know, there was Amarante stage on Saturday, there was Arganil on Friday, and then of course Sunday was all about Faf. It was great. No, really. Really enjoyed it. Really, I've got to say, you know, we're recording this on Tuesday and I still feel quite tired.
You're not rally fit anymore. That's what it
no,
is.
That's, I'm going to stop. That is what it is, Lise.
Now, George, unlike me, you did watch Rally Portugal. You were very much the rally fan this weekend.
I turned into a Lisa. I was a complete anorak, especially after Ott stopped with his wheel off. I thought, No way has he hit something. There's no mark on the side of the car. I was watching it live when it happened. And then it was the next day, on Sunday. I thought, I'm going to look at that. I'm going to check it all out. And I got really anoraky on the whole thing. And I went back over the whole stage. And I know they did mention it on the TV, on the feeds, the WRC feeds, that the TV producer had looked back at it and seen nothing. And I thought, stuff it, I'm going to look. So I looked back. Now, it's not great quality that they let you view it on, but it's certainly good enough to see if the car's hit anything and taken any thumps. And through stage 14, wasn't it? Yes, stage 14, he didn't put a foot wrong. It was perfect. The car might have taken a couple of minor little groundings, but like on the sump guard, just under braking, absolutely in the line. Certainly nothing to knock a wheel off. And then I went back to stage 13. I thought, well, he's given it a whack then. The damage has been done somewhere else because that's not going to fall apart like that. That is not going to break in that manner that it did without a hit. So I went back to stage 13. Not a thing to see at all, other than the most fabulously perfect driving. Having now spent an hour in the car with Ott, I realise how personal it is. It's so calm. He's got so much time now. Of course, you don't see him physically driving, and of course, in my mind, I can. But in my mind, he's actually very, very calm in that car because he's so perfectly positioned. You can hear and feel. You can actually feel the power coming on and off. You know, you'll power into a corner, gauge the traction, back off the throttle, feel it through, and then, you know, more and more, and pull away, knock it up the box, and away he goes. Beautiful driving. all the time in the world. Very normal. I know you've all looked at it before. When a driver's winning, as he was at the time, he has all the time in the world. He didn't put a foot wrong. So I thought, right, I'll go back to stage 12. I looked at stage 12. Even just the same again, just absolutely perfect. So then I went back and looked at stage 14 again with an extra critical eye, now being the fully experienced observer. And I went through that, and you can start to hear a funny wee noise at some point.
Oh,
a few minutes before the problem reveals itself, you start to hear something that almost sounds like a tire rubbing on the rim, but you couldn't quantify it. But I can tell you it wasn't present on the previous two stages. So here was me trying to do this incredible RCFA, root cause failure analysis on the car or the driver. I certainly found nothing wrong with the driver. I'm filled with even more admiration for our drivers. It just absolutely perfect. And the minimalist way that the pace notes are being delivered, have you listened to them intently?
It's
unbelievably minimalist.
George, what you're saying is really, really interesting, because you know what you're describing is a driver who's at one with the car, and that has not been the case.
No, he's not.
Tanak in that Hyundai i20, and
he's not quite, Cole.
Isn't he?
No, well, that was his point, wasn't it? That the hand was in the glove, but the glove wasn't completely fitting the hand perfectly.
Not completely, but it's as close to being perfectly in the glove as we've seen in 18
but
months,
David. In his own words, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, exactly. Can I just pick you up on what you're saying with those onboards? You've watched the onboards, obviously. We have to be incredibly careful, because you can't watch the whole stage from the forward-facing onboard, and you can't watch the whole stage
from
the driver's view.
I did.
But just one angle?
Yeah,
one view.
One angle,
yeah,
one view, the whole thing.
Oh, it is just one angle?
Yeah.
And you
watched the whole thing.
Absolutely nothing at all.
Sitting behind the windscreen on the co-driver's side. He did not put a foot wrong, like really not put a foot wrong. And a couple of times I'm thinking, wrong line here.
Yeah.
Went back and you know, just stopped it at that point, took it back 15 seconds, and I looked at what he was doing. I thought, well, yeah, okay, maybe, you know, wrong line. No, it was a particular line he took, presumably to avoid something that I've not seen, because the vision is not that good. Plus the fact, you know, a double apex corner. So you're sticking. There's a couple of times I thought he was a bit tighter in when he could have been wider, but that's a dangerous aspect. Yeah. He's following a lot of cars,
George,
clean line, blah, 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 blah. Perfect.
George, you like me, have stood at stage ends many, many times and heard drivers saying, I didn't hit anything. And yeah, they might not have hit something at the point where perhaps the suspension went or the tire gave up. But what they're failing to tell you is that on the previous stage they smacked something, or earlier on in that stage they cracked a log or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So many times. And very, very, very rarely when a driver tells you, I didn't hit anything, is he telling you the entire truth. But I have to say, from everyone I've spoken to, David, you spent Saturday night watching the onboards. George, you've watched it. Mm-hmm. Adamo's reaction when we tried hard to get an explanation from him suggests that there was a failure there. There was a failure on that rear right suspension.
If you'd let me finish my RCFA comments, you'd have got the whole story.
Then.
But no, you don't want it. That's okay. I'll keep it to myself.
Go on, Judge. Where do you want it? I'm just saying that it's just...
So that was me doing my damnedest to, you know, look at the driver and to listen to the car. And I start to think about what I'd maybe heard. And the only conclusion I could make, and this is without looking at the metal, the only conclusion you could make is something came loose.
Yeah.
Or a part has failed catastrophically, relatively quickly probably, through a failure of manufacture, or a failure of inspection on rebuild and reuse. You know, are they crack testing all their? I mean, it was a drag strut. It was a longitudinal arm that had failed, because you saw the wheel moving backwards and forwards while still being held in the correct plane laterally. So it was still pointing the right way initially. It was only when one of them failed that the wheel moved around completely. Did something come loose? Did something on the chassis fail that broke away?
That was my thought, George, was that something had worked loose.
Yeah.
And because it was quite a progressive failure, wasn't it?
Well, that's the thing, is if something comes loose, there's several possibilities there. There's and I've not seen the car to understand how everything's attached. So the lateral link, so the longitudinal link, you know, stopping the wheel moving backwards and forwards, interestingly enough, transmitting all the power of the car. All the power is transmitted forward through that link, like 90% of it goes through that. So massive forces on that link. So there could be a bolt-on mounting onto the chassis or onto the subframe that it mounts onto. Quite often they're on the chassis, they're separate from the subframe, those mounts. But again, I've not seen that car to see how it's configured. So there's a potential that something's, you know, something in single shear, a set of bolts in single shear have worked their way loose slowly. Maybe I was hearing a little bit of something like that initially, maybe I wasn't. That's a speculative comment, but I definitely heard it. And if you go and listen to it, you can hear occasionally something, it sounds like something's rubbing on the wheel two or three minutes before. Probably around about 16-17 minutes into the stage, you start to hear it. There's a possibility that something's come off the upright. There'll be a mount bolted onto the upright. The link itself is held by a bolt front and rear up and down with a rose joint in the middle. Unlikely that could come loose because it's in double shear. So there's no forces acting on it other than in shear force. And there'll be big bolts, they'll not break. So it'd have to be something at either end. Something on the upright, something on the...
One thing is for sure, George, sorry to interrupt again. And, Cole, you and I discussed this while we were watching it at the time. You know, why didn't he just keep dragging the thing through? And I spoke to Andrea Rodamo afterwards. And, you know, as we said, he said very, very little about the technical aspect of the failure. But
As he always does.
I said, could he have got through? You know, I said, Colin and I are fairly simple-minded people, but we just thought that keep going. And he said that. It was not going anywhere. And there was still, I can't remember.
Did you see the in-car visit? When the wheel obviously lost its lateral, one of its lateral connections, if not both of them, it then started to hop. It would have smashed the car to pieces.
It's not going anywhere.
So it would have smashed the car to pieces. Yeah.
So a couple of things there, George, just very, very quickly, because we can move on from Tanak. Tanak's car is now beginning to bore me. But it was a very in-depth analysis, that's for sure. But what was interesting, David, the only thing, and it kind of goes back to one of the things you said there, George. You talked about the stress testing of parts that are going back on, I suppose, parts that have already been part used, yeah?
Yes.
Is what you were referring to. Yeah, okay. Well, the only thing that Adamo said to David and to myself was, when I need a stress engineer, I will speak to you. That's exactly the words he used, when I need a stress engineer. So perhaps you've hit something there, George. Perhaps it was something that hadn't been correctly tested. Who knows? Who knows? But what we know, listen, what does that do for Roy? Well, it gives him another event where, okay, he didn't score nothing because he scored points in the power stage. But he's now a long way behind David. But, we came away from from Portugal, and I was saying, well, it looks as if the title is going Toyota's way. It's way too early to say that. You know, Tanak's only 30 odd points behind, Neuville's 20 odd points behind. But my goodness me, they've got a big job to do now, those Toyota drivers, haven't they? And they've kind of got to, I suppose, work in tandem to deny the Hyundai drivers a big job to do, and they've got to work in tandem to deny the Toyota drivers as many points as they can.
Yeah, let's do that. That standings, championship standings at the moment, Ogier top 79. Evans 2 points behind his teammate on 77. Then it's Thierry Neuville on 57 and Oeyt Tanak 45, with Calle Rovanperä just 4 points behind Tanak on 41.
So, I mean, it is just, you know, both Tanak and Neuville are a failure behind, effectively, Evans and Ogier, you know, but you'd have to say both Ogier and Evans look really, really strong just now, and the Toyota looks really, really strong just now. But no, I think it was a little premature in declaring that the title, the driver's title, was perhaps going Toyota's way.
You know, all the comments that you made about, you know, everyone's making it the Hyundai is the fastest car at the moment. So why does it look like it? So the drivers go a little bit faster for part of the rally. And then, in the case of Thierry, he crashed. In the case of Ott, I mean, it was a very small margin by Ott standards. If you look at his driving, he was quite clearly in the groove. I don't think you could make that measurement based on what you saw. I think those cars are incredible.
It was the fastest car.
It was the fastest car. It was. So it's like saying you've got a fastest stage time, you're the fastest driver in the world. Doesn't mean jack. It's the end of the rally, it matters. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I don't think it's the fastest car. It's the fastest.
But it was the fastest car. It doesn't mean it's the strongest car or the most durable car.
I would say that Ott and Thierry are the fastest drivers at the moment. That's fair to say.
That's possible.
That's fair to say.
Possible.
But I wouldn't extend it to the car, because we've got Ott saying the car's not just 100% perfect yet. We've got Thierry putting it on its roof. Okay. So that tells you that he's over the limit.
It didn't quite make the roof.
Side. Fair enough. You know,
no, it did. It did, David. It did.
Yeah. Whatever.
It went through 380 and then... What's the next one? It went through another 90. No, 380, but then it went through 360, sorry. And then it went through another 90. It did a 470. It did a 470.
You're quite good with the numbers, Colin.
I don't know what's wrong with me tonight. A 360 and a 90, and it ended up on its side.
One thing I think we do have to say, absolutely, is that, you know, when I was sitting there typing for hours on Sunday night, Cole, writing that whole, the report and everything.
Yeah.
I don't think I gave Tanak enough credit. And you know, thinking back now, we've talked a lot about Tanak, and we do need to move on in a sec. But, you know, you kind of reflect on the first day he struggled and it wasn't coming naturally, blah, blah, blah. But then on that, you know, on the Saturday, you kind of forget that. I think he was only not, before the incident, he was only not quickest on like one stage or something.
Yeah, just beautifully measured.
Fire,
just the right amount of extra. He did not overdrive at any point. I don't think we talked enough about that in my piece.
And you and I discussed it, Col, and we in one of the videos.
Crafted,
we were saying that, you know, when he actually gets into the groove and when everything starts to click, watch out. Because, I don't think anybody right now can hold a candle to Tanak.
No, I agree with you. And it's back to that kind of Toyota dominance when he was in the Toyota, isn't it? You know, and that's what he's looking to get. And do you know what? One of the things that Adamo did say that made sense, quite a lot of it didn't make any sense that he said to us, but one of the things he did say that made reasonable sense was, you know, he said, how many rallies have we got to the end of the year? That is the number that we will win or that we can win. You know, he fully expects his drivers and the car to be absolutely up there. But you have to balance that with the fact that, you know, we haven't seen the best of Ogier yet this year. First on the road here, obviously, we really didn't see him getting into his stride. And we certainly haven't seen the best of Elvin Evans. For me, Elvin Evans has been nowhere near his best, but he's winning rallies, he's scoring podiums. It's phenomenally encouraging for Elvin Evans fans. And, you know, Tanak has to up his game. The Toyota has to up its performance, because I think you've got two drivers at Hyundai has to up its performance. I'm getting my Hyundais, my Toyotas mixed up all the time here. But the Hyundais have to up their performance, because the Toyotas, I think, are just about coming into their stride. They're not there yet.
The Hyundai is what we've generally seen on the second pass, and where it's rougher and there's a bit more grip in the road, the Hyundai will be quicker. I think that's perhaps fair to say, you know, generally. But then we didn't see that at all, did we, on the first run? Portugal they were.
But can I just nudge another thing into the equation? Somebody that we talk around, but we never actually talk much about, and he won stages this weekend, Danny Sordo.
But the thing with Sordo, the thing that's impressive with Sordo is that, you know, he sits out all these rallies and then he jumps in the car.
Yeah.
And there's massive expectation on him. You know, the expectation was that he would push for at least a podium here and perhaps push for the win.
But that expectation, Cole, comes from the running order as well, doesn't it? His place.
Yeah, of course.
That great place on the road.
Yeah. But you know what? You've got to be some professional to be able to get in that car. And even with the advantage of running order, you'll push it to its absolute limit. And, you know, I think I said in my driver rating...
Do you know what? He didn't finish out of the top three in any stage.
That's pretty major, isn't it?
That is quite an amazing stat. And you know, he didn't quite have enough on Sunday. Evans was just in that first stage on Sunday morning. That was his best. That's where we saw the best of Evans.
Sordo
does exactly what the team wants him to do every single time.
Remarkable, Colin. Absolutely remarkable.
It is. Yeah. It is remarkable. For a man at his point in his career, he just does it.
All his career, though, that's kind of, he's always done that. I mean, we spoke about him when he was second in command to Loeb. You know, he stood aside when team orders dictated he should. And I really do. I really feel for Danny. I really feel that.
Don't worry, he's paid a lot of money, I'm sure.
I know, but that's not what it's about. It's not just about the money, is it, George?
Not when you're doing it, but it is after you've done it. It's all about the money. I'm sure he's very happy right now, Lisa.
But we, Colt, you and I had quite an argumentative rally. This one,
unusual.
We locked horns a few times, and one thing that I was reflecting on that I sort of backed down a little bit in one of our videos was when I said he's a professional driver, he should be expected to win. I could completely see your perspective that, you know, it's a long time out of the car to jump back in. He's a third driver. It's potentially not what he's there for. But I would sort of stand by a little bit what I said, that, you know, he was 10 seconds behind Evans on that Sunday morning. And I think the reason that he didn't push like hell was because of that expectation he'd bring home 18 points or 15 points, yeah. 18 points for the team. I would like to have known what would have happened if in third and fourth positions was Thierry Neuville and Loic Tanak and they were a minute behind him. Probably he'd have been told to slow down.
Yes, he would have been. He would have been. Of course he would.
But okay, then here's the one then, George. So it's actually Sebastien Ogier who's third, a minute back. What do? You know, you can't, if you tell Danny to stop, then you're going to promote Ogier as well.
Well, that's the normal dilemma, so you can't do it, you know, in that circumstance.
What would he have done? What would sort of have done then? You know, when he can go into that last morning, all guns blazing, would he, you know, if there was no need for him to finish the rally, would he have won? Could he have won? I don't know.
Nah.
I was throwing it out there.
No. I don't think he could have.
He had been put under immense pressure by the comments from Adamo. Horrendous comments to make. Imagine something terrible had happened and that was sitting on Adamo. That's not smart at all. It isn't.
I'm not sure Danny spent too long reading dirtfish.com. I know he's an avid reader, but I think Saturday night he might have been busy.
But those were quite incredible comments.
But those comments weren't aimed at Danny in the slightest. You know, they were absolutely aimed at Alvin, weren't they? And Toyota. And you know, Danny he's seen it all, he's heard it all, you know, the likes of Olivier Chael and Guy Frecklin. David Richards at ProDrive, you know, he's had all of these team principals giving him the benefit of their wisdom.
That's an interesting comment. The benefit of their wisdom or the fervour of their madness. Who knows? Who knows what it might be?
A fine blend of both, George.
Indeed it is. Yeah.
But I think we do. I mean, perhaps we move on to Toyota and, you know, how they pulled that one off. You know, when Friday morning, good Lord, you know, you could see we were up at Arganil Col at the tyre zone now on Friday lunchtime. There was, you know, we weren't allowed to talk to anybody. But, you know, we made a few hand signals to some of the Toyota drivers from off that bank, socially distanced by about 30 metres. And, you know, it was genuine concern. You know, it had to be.
Totally. You know, and it was nothing to do particularly with tyre choice because everyone had gone out with the same tyre choice on the Friday morning. You know, obviously as the road evolved, you know, those tyres performed differently. But the Toyota just didn't really seem to be dealing with the conditions on Friday morning. And it was a little bit strange. It was a strange kind of situation. There was quite a bit of head scratching going on in that tyre zone.
I suppose at that point,
you wouldn't have put too much money on a Toyota win at that point, would you?
You wouldn't, but you could have said at that point as well, you know, there's two Toyotas you can take out of this equation because Ogier was first on the road and, you know, by far the worst of the conditions. Takamoto Katsuta was further back on the road and actually was the leading Toyota and was doing very well. So it was Evans and Calais. So Calais, you could say, you know, he was coming back after a big old shunt in Croatia. And just didn't seem to get his head into gear throughout the whole event. It just wasn't, it totally didn't click. And Elvin just wasn't comfortable with the car, was he, on Friday morning? They'd struggled, you know, across all of those Toyotas, you know, they hadn't got really any significant running on the hard tyre at the test before. They'd all had wet tests in Portugal. Mm-hmm. And clearly, having said that, though, Toyota did their Pirelli test in Spain, didn't they? Was that last month? You know, they've got these extra 9 days to do some Pirelli running. And I'm sure they had some dry running then, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't nearly the same conditions. It was much cooler.
That was very much what we were hearing, wasn't it, David? That you know, it was the experience with the tyres that they were lacking.
Yeah.
I don't know what they'd have done much differently, mind you. Okay. George, you know, it's not just the experience in terms of selecting the right tyre choice for the loop. Mm. It's actually, is it about experience of how you drive on the tyres, how hard you push them in the conditions? What is it they're talking about there? It isn't just about the tyre selection, is it?
No, it's not. It's such a complex dynamic. And the tyres will be fantastic, but they will give certain things in a certain, they'll deliver certain performance in a certain way. And you need to set your car up and drive accordingly. I watched Oktanak on those three stages, and you could quite clearly see he was managing the tyre wear. I mean, it was very apparent, and very, very intelligently as well. You know, when he hit the tarmac and the cobbled sections, he just eased off. He didn't push the car. He didn't try to get fast. He kept it straight. He was almost pushing through corners, slightly understeering almost, just to keep the car on the limit and in the right place, not to scrub the tyres. Coming out of those really rough, slower corners, he was just backing off through the corner until the car was dead straight, and then he was letting it go. Mm. Very, very impressive. And I've watched Elfyn Evans through as well, and it's, you'd really want two laptops sitting side by side to gauge the difference precisely. But to my mind, Ott is taking one bite at a corner, and it's a clean, straightforward bite. There's never much flapping around. You're always seeing the road ahead of you. And when I've looked at Elfyn, I'm seeing a car that's maybe taken a couple of second little bites and gone a wee bit sideways after the corner. This is when he was still lying in second place, still thinking, you know, can I find anything extra? And he couldn't. And I'm looking at the video and I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, maybe that car is not giving us something. The car will give you certain wear characteristics, and it'll give you transition dynamics over the road, but you've also got to set your car up very carefully for it. And maybe Hyundai engineers are better at it than Toyota. Maybe the car's just better suited. Maybe they've been lucky and struck on it. I'm sure there's a lot more to come out of both cars. But don't take away anything from Ott was just driving that rally in a place that was utterly, utterly easy for him.
It's an interesting one, though, George, because, you know, how much is there to come out of these cars? You know, these cars have half a season left in them.
Yeah.
Okay, the engine carries on, but, you know, you're not, all of the jokers have been used.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting when you talk to Toyota. And they say, "Yep, we're gonna, you know, we got a test this week. We're gonna do this, and this." Well, what can he do?
We were seeing swings of a second a kilometre regularly on this rally. You imagine someone puts two or three stages together where you pull all that together. All of a sudden, you're winning 40, 50 seconds over 40 or 50 kilometres. That's massive, and of course we do occasionally see that. You know, Ott's done it, Thierry's done it. Thierry, the comeback king. You know, if Thierry has a problem and he continues, woe betide, he better be 2 minutes behind, or he'll still win that rally. You know, because the guy's so brilliant in that scenario. If he can tap into that out of the start, you know, I would tip his car on its side in service in the morning and say, "Geez, Terry, we've rolled your car in service. You'll need to go, like, there's a 10-second penalty for you." He'd go out and win the rally by 3 minutes. You know, I merely jest. But you know what I mean? He produces those performances. I think there's a lot to come out of these cars. They're so powerful and the dynamics are so marginal that somebody that can slot themselves into the ideal setting for that car, there's seconds per kilometre here and there to be won.
But George, that's, I can see your point, but how have we got then to this point, you know, 4.5 years down the road into these homologation cycles, and they still haven't found that perfect groove that they can tap the laptop and say, let's have what we had last year.
The changes, the tyre dynamic, it'll be very different.
Yeah.
It'll be a very, very different car. Yeah.
Remember, we go to Sardinia with the hard compound, or we assume it's going to be the hard compound Pirelli. I suppose the question has to be, how much testing have the teams done on the hard compound? You know, we saw Pirelli themselves testing extensively in Sardinia with Mikkelsen last year, but how much have the teams got? How much data have the teams got of testing?
That's it. That hard getting compound? Getting those setups. Look, they'll have pulled out a huge amount of data from this event, yeah. So they'll really know what direction they want to take the car in.
But
it was quite different style of event, isn't it? You know, it could be 20 degrees warmer.
Yeah.
In Sardinia.
It's heading up towards 30 degrees in Sardinia. Yeah. It might even get hotter than that. We find that when you head up, towards the centre of the island, it can get hotter.
That will change some dynamic of the tyre, but not the general dynamic characteristic of the tyre in what you want out of the car. To a greater extent, they will have gleaned a lot of that information from Portugal and they'll go away in a very good place. Tyre wear, another issue entirely, of course.
But it is absolutely, absolutely vital that, you know, we've seen in Tannock 1 and 17. So the last Thierry won in 16. So four? Certainly Toyota has never won, has it, in Sardinia. And I would say four of the last five Sardinias have been won by Hyundai. So, yeah.
Toyota should have won by a stretch that year at the Tannock.
Yeah,
had all four of the cars, because remember, Hanninen was there that year as well. All four of them supposedly had steering issues. So the car can go well, but I get what you're saying, David.
But it doesn't work on Hyundai, it doesn't work. It is, because, you know, for sure, you know, I was talking to Tom Fowler about when Greece coming back, and Tom said, oh, you know, on a personal level, it's fantastic, brilliant rally, but, you know, it's not rocket science to look at the results of rough gravel rallies to understand that, you know, Toyota's is perhaps the less durable of the three of them at the moment.
It'll be interesting.
For sure, they need a big haul of points, Hyundai, right now to pull themselves back into this, because at the minute, Toyota is kind of walking away with it. It's manufacturer-wise, it's looking strong.
It's Toyota's to lose, and Hyundai, you know, Toyota are going to have to make mistakes for Hyundai to be able to overhaul them quickly. But I think in the long game, you know, you bounced on it at the start. You know, Tannock coming back, winning pretty well every rally left there. You know, and then also taking the full power point. You know, he could pull 12 points per rally out of the next guy, the guy that's in second that doesn't get power points. Yeah. So, you know, the margins they appear very big, and the chances are that they'll not narrow that quickly, but they could, even if the guy in second place was just you know, playing the cards and saying, well, I'm going to be nice and safe, I'll not bother with power points. You got a few retirements, people are going for the power points, I'm not going to race them because I've got my 18, and you come away with just 18 points and not walked away with 30. Do that.
But look at the second half of the season, and you got Estonia, Ypres, Greece, Finland, Spain, Japan. So Estonia, Tannock, Ypres, Neville, Greece, Hyundai, Finland, arguably Tannock. Spain.
Toyota. You know. No, Finland, you've got to say it's Toyota. Finland has to be Toyota.
That's a fairly good point.
Yeah.
But in terms of fast driver on fast rally, you know, Tannock's got a pretty good.
Because there's no Estonia ever won Finland, Colin, has there? No, right enough. Otsno's not got a chance. Has he?
But you've got to say it's been Toyota's rally since they came back. Remember, they hadn't been beaten in Finland, George, until we went to Rovaniemi.
Yeah. Do you know who's going to win Finland this year?
Elvin Evans.
Takamoto Katsuta.
Hey, watch him go. I've been saying it since the start of the year. Watch him go, but watch him when we get to Japan.
He's the Japanese Finn, trust me.
Well, he lives there, doesn't he?
He does, exactly. He's lived there for a few years now.
I think he speaks a bit. He's got his little babies. Well, he's not a little baby anymore, but, you know, I think the wee ones speak in Finnish. So that's how Finnish Takamoto-san almost is.
Yeah. It's going to be good. It'll be good.
It is going to be good, but he was for me really quite impressive again, chaps. You know, and chapesses, Takamoto-san. Yeah. It's the consistency and the point again I made in my driver ratings was
Colin. What a survivor that was! What a smack!
That was fantastic.
That was.
But you have to put it into context. He had two massive crashes on his last two gravel rallies. They were massive in Estonia and in Sardinia last year, and he comes back. And all right, he had a few moments. He definitely had a few moments. But he was quick again. He was quick and he was consistent. And the important thing, is he improved again? And he just keeps improving. And who knows where those improvements stop, George? I mean, you know, he may well find himself competing at the very, very top.
Colin, he basically is. There is no way that any Japanese driver in the WRC has been as fast as Takemoto-san. There is no way. He is the fastest by far. Now, I know I was listening to all the commentaries about him and this and that and the next thing. Don't forget that we have had a Japanese WRC event winner, Yoshio Fujimoto.
In Kenya.
And that was a massive battle against a guy that fought at the front. So the, don't take anything away from the guy. That was a great, great result on a long distance event that requires a slightly different discipline, but a lot of speed. But Yoshio could never emulate that on a European event, not even close. You know, he'd be a second and a half a kilometre away from that. And Toshi Arai, not even close. Not even. But not the type of performance we're seeing.
But he did him on Acropolis in Cyprus, so, like you said, George, it wasn't the performance. Style event.
I mean, we just watched one of the best rallies I've watched in many years, Portugal Rally. And I know you all thanked the organisers massively in your roundup. How well deserved was that? What an amazing rally in an amazing place with amazing people. And I mean, I was looking at some of the aerial shots as I was following the rally through. And it looks like these roads have actually been... I'm looking at it thinking, there's no reason for that road to do that other than to make it nice to drive. Look, they've built a 350-kilometre rally route, especially for us. I love the Portuguese.
George,
they're lovely people.
Those,
the best place in
those...
the world.
Some of those aerial shots, George, on the Friday in particular, up across Arganil, were just totally breathtaking.
Yeah.
Across the top of the ridges and
just
down the other side, it was absolutely the best of rallying in terms of visually. It was the best we've seen in a long time.
Just
it?
Amazing. You got lovely weather, not too hot for David. He could still wear his corduroys and jumper.
Oh, it was too hot for him. It was too hot at times.
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. It'd be too cold. It wasn't too cold. It wasn't too cold for you, Colin. It wasn't wet for the marshals. I'm happy for the marshals.
Hang on. Did
Sorry?
You have your toes out, Colin?
No, Lisa, I've moved on. I've moved on, Lisa. I have a little bit.
Timberland
the
man.
The sandals have been. I don't know when they last came out on
Colin,
a rally.
Colin, you were barefoot on Wednesday. On the
barefoot.
Beach.
I was on the beach in the sea, barefoot. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
but I've got.
Right. That's acceptable.
It's not, Lisa.
Well, I've got a pair of orange Dirtfish trainers, which are great, and I wear those. And I've got a pair of boots. They're kind of Aussie work boots that I sometimes wear with my shorts.
You're supposed to send me some T-shirts.
Got them in the back of my car. They're sitting waiting.
They'll be there in December.
Probably.
And that boot potentially does fill with water.
George, it doesn't, because it's got a jacket for you. The jacket's actually in a proper postal bag, with my address on the back and nothing on the front.
It's very cold in Kenya in the mornings. If you're driving from Nairobi up to Naivasha, I won't be. I'll be up in Naivasha, but it can be quite cold up there in the mornings, 3 or 4 degrees. If you go over the top,
you'll have a nice Dirtfish jacket, George. Don't you worry.
Get it all sorted out for me. Anyway, what an amazing rally! And I was just wondering, does Elfin go home in between rallies? I was looking at one of the other risks on this rally that struck me as very, very real and something that perhaps needs to be managed a little bit more proactively by the teams, although I'm sure they're onto it. The COVID risk, we saw a number of drivers not starting the rally because they had proved positive for COVID.
Are you sure?
So,
excuse me, George.
Is Elfin going home?
Do they now just stay in Europe? Because, you know, Britain is quite specific with this Indian variant. And, you know, Cole, we're having these question marks over our flights via Germany to Italy. If you were Elfin,
I should highlight
you...
the fact is the first rally as well that you haven't had to quarantine when you've come back, because Portugal's in the green light area. But,
absolutely, Lise.
But
there are
that complicates things still.
There are question marks, though, about, you know, Britain. We see Austria today has closed its borders to Britain. So, you know, if you were at Elfin, would you think about maybe moving him with Scotty in Andorra? Moving out, I'm sure they've got a spare room. He could steam in there, because at least they're together and they're on sort of mainland Europe, aren't they? But if you're coming in and out of Britain, It is a little bit more complicated.
So private George, flights, private flights is how you do it. I mean, I would be absolutely.
Yeah, but still,
you're still bound by the
same regulation.
Yes, but what we're talking about is avoiding the positive COVID test, Lisa. What? Not anything else. Just avoiding that positive COVID test.
Yeah, but if we had a rally in Germany,
strictly isolating.
If we had a rally in Germany next weekend, not Italy. If you're from Britain, you can't go.
Unless you were staying in Europe, and you'd been in Europe for the last... So my point being, I would be interested to know that. David, get on the phone. Sort that out.
Right, I'll call him.
By the way, I've got to say, well done to the stewards. You know, I thought the stewards were sadly lacking in Croatia. I thought they absolutely bottled it with the very well-publicised Sebastian Ogier incident. But fair play to them. You know, what we said at the time about the Ogier incident was precedent and deterrent. And there was a bad precedent set in Croatia that served no deterrent. What the stewards have done in Portugal is they've set a precedent which will act as a massive deterrent. No one is going to mess around with their COVID declarations. No one's going to try and hide anything. You will be an absolute fool to. Knowing that the stewards will come down on you like a ton of bricks. Well done, the stewards, for
absolutely.
For growing a pair,
again,
I would say.
Yeah, round of applause. Look, I wanted to ask one question. You maybe know the answer. So I read Ollie Christian Vaby, his comment where he said an official told him it was okay to go home. As long as he went
in
a car.
What's an official, though? Everyone's got an excuse, George.
Well,
what's
that's
an official,
not what I wondered. I wondered what sort of guy is he? I mean, I presume he's quite a nice guy,
person,
like his dad or not.
There is one person. There is one person you talk to.
The COVID,
to get directions.
The COVID representative.
It is the COVID officer.
Yeah.
It is the COVID officer. And if a nurse, if a doctor, if anyone else has said to you, take your car, drive to Spain, just make sure you're on your own, you check that with a COVID officer.
Of course
if you're
you
your team, if you or your team don't do that...
Yeah.
Well, more fool you.
Absolutely.
More fool you.
I do think there is one area that does need kind of tightening up a little bit is where the Appendix S, the FAA's protocol for coronavirus, where does that overlap with national governance and guidance and stuff? I would be reluctant to use the saying grey areas, but it does need, you know, I think we go from rally to rally and people aren't 100% sure on, say, the Monday before an event, you know, whose guidance are we following? Is it the national? Is it the country you've come from? Is it the country you're in? Is it FIA?
That's very true.
You know, that's one area that we really could do with absolutely sharpening up on. And
to be honest, if it's anything like the UK, it changes so often that you're confused.
It's bananas.
Or they tell you far too far in advance that it's going to change. So you think, is that this week or is that next week? Or is that
I think there is confusion. But I think in this circumstance, I think the stewards were right. From what I've read, you know.
Can you clarify what you're talking about?
So Ollie Christian Vaby, you have to sign a declaration form when you go to the rally. And the declaration form is signed by everyone, from drivers to media to mechanics to everyone that's in attendance. And you have to declare that you are symptom-free, and you have to declare that you have had no close contacts with anyone who has consequently tested positive for COVID. Ollie Christian Vaby didn't declare his close contact with Andreas Mikkelsen, as we understand it.
Right.
Who had tested positive.
So there's the first transgression.
There's the transgression. Uh-huh. And to further compound it, as I say, it is very, very clear that, you know, if you test positive, you stay hotel-bound for 14 days, which is horrible. You know, but that's what it says. Now he didn't. He left the country and went actually across border, left Portugal and drove to Spain.
That's the bit that's bonkers, isn't it? I mean, you know, regardless of who says, "Yep, you can go to Spain." I can what? I can leave the country, really,
with COVID and go to another country. anyone who's been following even remotely, which we've all had to do, the COVID crisis for the last 18 months. Would have questioned that kind of advice.
100%.
Would have questioned it. Are you sure I can go into another country with COVID?
But, you know, Carl, he fell at the first hurdle. You know, fundamentally, the thing that is absolutely banged into all of us is if you're with somebody who's got coronavirus, you declare it and you isolate. And that is massively irresponsible. not to do that. It's and you know, for me, bang on the right decision. 6 months. See ya, mate. Sorry, you know, you've jeopardized how many people's lives. Yeah. You know, this thing kills people.
That is the scary thing, isn't it?
I agree totally. So for me, the biggest thing to come out of that is that the stewards have done what the stewards are supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they've acted in the right way, and they have created a precedent which will absolutely deter anyone from doing it in the future. So, yeah, well 100%. Done. Well done. Good. Okay, move on from that, shall we?
Gang, I'll get myself into trouble. I was going to say,
we're going to be back with a preview for Rally Sardinia, because that's how soon these rallies are falling, pretty much back to back to back to back. If you're in touch, if you want to get in touch, hashtag Dirtfish Rally. If you want to query, question, or set us right on anything we've said, or ask us any questions that you need answering, then hashtag Dirtfish Rally is the best place, or at Dirtfish Rally is the best way to get in touch with Colin Clark, the voice of Rally.
Yeah, I was thinking. Don't let me go yet. I'm not going yet, Lisa. I want to say one more thing. I think it would be remiss of us.
Bye, David. David, I've got to go. We'll catch you soon.
We'll see you, David.
Adios. Bye, David.
Bye.
Okay, well, I'll just finish with my last word, and it's really just to pay tribute to Max Mosley. You know, Max Mosley sadly passed away this week, fought a very valiant battle against cancer, we're told. It's a terrible thing. But, you know, Max Mosley, a very, very colourful character. But in terms of his legacy to world motorsport and to safety, in terms of road car safety, you know, it's easy to overlook that. But he did a remarkable job in terms of upping the safety standards and safety levels, not just in motorsport, but in road car design as well. So, you know, Max Mosley, who sadly passed away this week, I'm sure, you know, will be missed by a lot of people.
Yeah, okay.
George.
My comment is a couple very quick ones. One, what an incredible job I think Toyota did, because they produced a car that went the distance and gave the drivers what they needed. And I thought that, you know, given all the comments I was listening to and the feed, you know, my opinions fed in by yourself, by David, by the other media, other comments, what the driver says. And I just would compare Elfin's drive to a Carlos Sainz drive. Not necessarily the fastest, but the best rally driver on the event, because he won.
Yeah, and you know, very appropriate, George, because don't forget,
amazing drive.
Portugal is where Carlos made his debut in the World Championship, and where Carlos won his first stage in the championship.
Oh,
was it? I think it was maybe also his first WRC win as well. Was it?
It may have been. Yeah, it may have well
been.
Have been.
I remember we won there with the, I think it was actually.
You won there. You beat the dominance of Lancia. Didn't they?
And then we won there with the Pirelli tyre. Yeah, it was the new Pirelli tyre from Brevio. So there was that, and also Ott Tanaka. Look, mate, you were robbed. You were robbed. It wasn't right. What a tremendous drive. Now that I've spent some time within the car, I've got a great affinity for your driving. I really enjoyed my time with you in your car. I might use that facility more in WRC.com now. I very rarely use it because I get bored. But as soon as I've got something to target and watch, you know, I'm completely joined up with it. I'm not a super fan like Lisa, but as soon as I've got something technical to watch, yes, go for it. And just to all the teams, when I might be allowed to come and have a look at your cars and understand them a little bit better technically, I have had some feedback from some of our listeners that they would like more detailed technical insights. I do my best, but often I have to be generic because I don't actually understand everything about the setup on the car. So if I get myself a little bit more detail, I can do a better job. I'm sure people probably don't want to hear from me in technical terms and things. But if they do,
send you out. Take a look under the bonnet.
I need to be under the bonnet. I need to be underneath the car line on my back, understanding some of the dynamics. Remember, if you think back to Portugal a few years ago when Sebastian lost all the rear drive to his Polo. I managed to very quickly identify what the issue was. I was standing there at the stage start, and was it maybe Jari Matti went into a stage with two-wheel drive, and I said, it's absolutely the handbrake release. That was when the cars were still locked. It can't be anything else. There's nothing loose underneath that car. I was lying on the ground near the car, and I could see there was nothing broken. I watched the car move away. I could see all the drive shafts were turning. There was nothing broken in there. The only thing it could be was the clutch release. So again, technically, I can if I've got a decent enough insight into the car, I can I can make the input and get the insights for us, I'm sure.
Thank you for your application, Mr. Donaldson. We'll consider that carefully and we'll be getting back to you. You've been listening to Spin the Rally Pod. We're going to be back with a preview for the Rally Sardinia. Gets underway 3rd of June. Thank you very much. David Evans has left the building. The senior staff writer had to go and do some more interviewing before doing some more writing. But thanks, Colin, voice of Rally himself, and George Donaldson, our fabulous technical bod, former motorsport team boss, who knows his rivets from his...
Hot nuts.
Wrenches. Rivets from his wrenches. Thanks, Lise.
Cheers, Rats.
Thank you, Lisa. Bye. Bye, everyone.